Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Wood Talk. Now here are three guys who could do that too, if they had those tools. Mark, Shannon, and Matt.
What's happening, everybody? It's show number 555. We're back. We teased that we were like going to be gone forever. Matt dropped that at the end of the show. Like, goodbye, maybe forever.
Surprise!
But we're back!
Hello!
Yeah. So, as scheduled, on today's show, we're going to talk about transitional jointer planes, making a wide taper on a large slab, and what happens to Matt's wood. But before we get to that, we want to let you know that Wood Talk is brought to you by Rockler. Rockler's been helping customers create with confidence for over 65 years. Rockler is giving away a $250 gift card to one lucky Wood Talk listener. You can enter for your chance to win before September 30th at rockler.com/woodtalk. And we'd like to congratulate a certain person who won one of those giveaways. That's Jeffrey Adams.
People actually win.
Yep, especially in Missouri. He's from Missouri. I don't know what
especially.
Part. He's one of my fellow countrymen in Missouri.
You have better chances of winning if you're in Missouri. Is that what you're trying to
It must be. I think that's what's going on here.
Hey, Missouri's looking for anything to attract people, so that's one thing.
How dare you? It's gorgeous here. You stop it now. So congratulations, Jeffrey. We hope you get yourself some good Rockler goodies. There's plenty of them there. So let us know what you got. I'll let you know, you guys aren't being very good at telling us what you want or what you spent your money on. So I want to know.
Maybe they're just hoarding it.
They could be. Just waiting
for a rainy day, you know?
Waiting for another one of Rockler's great little inventions, like that sandpaper ripping jig. Did you see that for tearing sandpaper? It's pretty slick. Who was it? O'Connor's Woodworking or something on Instagram? He showed it the other day. I was like, ah, man, I hate like little products like that. They're so dumb, but they're so good. Like, it's so specific to that one thing, and I want to not like it, and then I look at it and go, gosh dang it, I want one.
Your immediate reaction is, yeah, I could probably build that, but I could also just add to cart and check out.
And be done with it, right?
Yeah, the little glue bottle thing that holds the bottle upside down.
Yeah.
Like, I'm all over that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, I could build it. Yeah, but knowing me, I'd end up gluing the bottle into like the wooden case because the Rockler's got like a silicone version.
Right,
like, yeah. I need to buy that, but yep. I absolutely don't need to buy that.
Yeah.
Somebody needs to invent this. Somebody probably has, but you need like an impulse shopping cart, like a cart that you add stuff to that you have no intention of buying until you like, you're like, well, only $3 more to get your free shipping. You need to be able to defer to that cart.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess it's called a wish list.
Mm-hmm. Well, Amazon has that, right? You could put something in your cart and then you can kind of remove it temporarily. Well, not temporarily. You just kind of
save it for later.
Yeah. Relegate it to the back end and then you can pop it in anytime you need to.
Yeah. I need that. Okay. Now I'm buying something. Add that silicone glue bottle thing to it.
There you go.
Yeah.
Man. All right. So what do we got on Patreon, Matt?
I don't know. Let me read the notes. It says I'm supposed to say something like, if you want to help support the show, you can do so by going to patreon.com/woodtalk and signing up to become a patron of the show. This time we're thanking Nick Berry, Steve Sparrow, and Brooke Appler Grizzly Bear Woodworks.
Whew. It's a mouthful.
All the words.
All of the words. It's good. All right. So, hey, quick note before we get into what's on the bench. I started a thing. And then I hurt my back, but that's another story.
Things.
But I started a thing. So a buddy of mine, really like, you know, super fitness buff kind of guy, invited me to one of those fitness challenges. And it was for a website I don't really follow. And I'm looking at it going, I'd like to do this, but I don't really care about that website. How cool would it be if we just did something like that in the woodworking world? Because I don't know if you guys noticed, some of us are out of shape. and I've seen it myself. I know what you guys look like, and you know, we could all use a little bit more fitness in our lives. I've seen you guys. So I started this thing called Fit Woodworkers. It's really nothing more than encouraging people to get into some kind of an activity plan to keep their body going. The bottom line is, you know, working in the shop is tough on our bodies, and the longer we can do it, the better. So having some kind of fitness plan in place, just a good measure, you know, a good thing to do. So I started it, and we're 6 days into it now. It's just a 30-day challenge where the current challenge is to simply just do a mile, either walked, run, cycle. That's not much on a bike, but you get the point. The idea is to get your butt out there doing something.
Car.
Swim a mile.
Go
swim
a mile. No driving, no motors. E-bikes don't count. Right? Skateboard, that would count. And it's going really well. We started a little group on Strava. If you're not familiar with that, that's an app for tracking, you know, fitness and mapping it out and stuff. So there's a group called Fit Woodworkers there that you could join. There's over 300 people there already. You know, Shannon's in there. I'm in there. A bunch of woodworkers you recognize are in there. And it's just a lot of fun. So if you're looking for a little bit of that extra accountability to help you get into some kind of a fitness plan, check it out. And you can commiserate with your fellow woodworkers about how hard exercise is. It's a lot of fun.
There you go.
So,
or if you just want to feel bad about your lack of activity, just look at the leaderboard.
Leaderboards suck, man. Anytime I ride my Peloton, it's the first window I hide. Boop. Like, if I really want to feel that bad about myself, you know, I've got other ways to do it. I don't need it on the bike. Leaderboards are rough. Oof. All right. So let's get to what's on the bench.
Or actually, before we do that, I think we should do the kickback first because it's fresh in people's minds.
Okay.
Brody wrote in and he said, "While I was trapped at my nephew's graduation, I listened to the announcers making each name unique. I think if Matt were to do this, I think they would all end in a question."
Definitely.
So I would seriously love to go to graduation and just have Matt just reading off names with Brooke Appler.
Just the question mark at the end of each one. Perfect.
Steve Sparrow. You know, and the kids are kind of like, do I move the tassel? Do I not? What am I supposed to do right now?
I think that was my name. I'm really not sure.
Nick Barry?
That would be great. Oh, good stuff. All right. Anyway, well, let's get to what's on the bench. For me, I've been on vacation, so not a lot of immediate work, but I did start the second part, two other pieces for Nicole's closet. So that's just a bunch of plywood, boring stuff, not a whole lot woodworking wise there. But I did do something with sandpaper. I bought a little sandpaper company, and that sounds even weird to say. It probably makes more out of it than it really is. But there's a double-sided sandpaper that I've been using.
The way you present things, it's just like...
I just want to temper expectations. You know what I mean? Like, if I set the bar low, I could only go up from there. It's kind of my habit in life.
I respect that.
I don't want people to get too excited here. So we have this double-sided sandpaper. I'll tell you more about it in the future when you can actually order it, but we had a little bit of inventory with the stuff we acquired from the guy who was making it previously, ripped through that in no time, and we're in the sort of producing our own packaging and all that other stuff to go with it. So that is underway, but it is really cool. It's small individual sheets of sandpaper. I've been using them from the guy that originally made them for like 10 years now. And it's one of those things that once you get used to having them in the shop, it's just a convenience that's super nice to just grab one and go. You get these nice sharp edges with sandpaper grit on both sides. When you fold, you know how sandpaper, typically you fold it, you get a little bit of a crushed edge and you have grit right there on that very edge. So if you're trying to use that to get a crisp fine detail and get into a corner, sometimes that could just cause problems, kind of blunt that internal corner. These are just nice and sharp. And when you wear it down, just grab a pair of scissors, cut the edge, and you got a nice new sharp edge to use it again. They're real pliable, but also like hold their shape enough that you can use it for finessing curves and things like that. So more about that coming up. It's called Backside Sandpaper. And hopefully we'll have some in stock within the next week or so. And we don't want to keep going out of stock. So we're trying to ramp up production as much as possible. So super exciting. It's just one of those things that it's fun to have another iron in the fire just to, you know, as a business.
Any more things.
In case you get bored.
Well, you can't trust any of this stuff, right? And I've got employees now. I got a cat, you know, got responsibilities, guys.
Right.
It's a whole thing.
Having not, you know, heard of this before, was it called Backside Sandpaper before, or
no,
is that your name?
That was my genius idea.
Because that does sound like a Spagnuolo original, right?
Yeah, because I wanted it to, the initials are now BS, which is great.
Yeah.
You also have the, you know, your backside, your butt, right? Mm-hmm. There's a reference
That's
there.
That's why I'm saying this is the Spagnuolo original.
There's lots of upward mobility here. The original company was called Epoch Woodworking, E-P-O-C-H. And that was the guy's name of his company. And then he made the sandpaper. It's a fine name, but I wanted something that was just a little more descriptive and a little bit more fun that you can kind of immediately have ideas of what we might be selling with. I think Epic was a little more generic than I wanted it to be. So we had to do a little bit of a brand change there.
So it's the end of an epic?
It is the end of an epic.
Oh.
Okay. <Yeah. laughs> So, Shannon, what do you got going on?
My mom is in this phase of her life where she's insistent that she has to give away all her stuff because apparently she's going to drop dead like at any moment.
How's she doing that?
She's reached that point where she's just like, okay, you need to take this and need to take this. So I've been getting just random boxes showing up my house filled with like Japanese heirlooms. For those that don't know, my mom is not Japanese, but she grew up in Japan. She lived in Japan all through the 50s and the 60s.
Wow.
Because my grandfather built ships, basically rebuilt the ships that we blew up in the 40s. So he built merchant ships and they lived in Japan for many, many years. So she's got just gorgeous, beautiful Japanese china, Japanese tea table. She's got a full suit of like samurai armor, just really cool stuff. And like, you know, that's stuff. Been her, yeah, really cool, sharp stuff too. So it's, I get these boxes that show up, and I got this box of Emariware Japanese tea set. And it's one of those things that's just way too beautiful to use that. And we're not really tea drinkers around here. So I am building a series of shadow boxes that will not only protect this, but display them at the same time. So it's, I'm going 3/4 kimono on this in that I'm using wood that started as its life as a log. I didn't fell the tree. I think, Cremona, you don't really fell trees that much.
Pretty rarely. Well, usually weighed down.
Yeah. Well, yes, they all start as a log. Thank you, Mark. But I had the log in my possession. I didn't buy the boards. I didn't want
anyone to miss that. It was a good joke. All right, go ahead.
The best.
So yeah, this is a log that I split. Some of it I sawed. Most of it I have roven. I roved it.
I had done roved it.
I had done roved it good.
But good.
So I'm taking and building a variety of shadow boxes. I'm building a little like ornamental serving tray to put like the teapot on and things like that. So it's kind of a, I don't know, an homage to an end of an epic. I don't know. But yeah, it's just kind of fun. It's one of those things where when you have that kind of line of sight into where the tree grew, it's just that neat little thing.
Yeah, it's
that
cool.
Whole thing. Yeah, nice. So I'm liking it.
That sounds fun.
Extra story.
Yeah, gotta love that.
That was a long story to say I'm building a shadow box. Three of them.
It was a very long sentence, but it was enjoyable. Matt, what about you?
Beautiful. Oh, thank you for asking, Mark.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
I am working on some trim in the great room. Try and get that room finished up so it can become used again.
Man, I love the videos of you like grabbing the fully assembled thing and just dropping it in the hole. It just like goes from rough to finished like that. It's awesome.
A lot of people ask about that. Like, what's the advantage of pre-assembling your full window trim as a unit instead of like, you know, building it in place?
Mm-hmm.
The amount of like finish prep and sanding and like caulking and everything I have to do, I could do at like workbench height.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And then slam it in there when you're done.
Right.
Totally worth it. You just pop it in, get it like positioned, get it racked so it looks nice, screw it in, and you're done. You just caulk it to the wall, and you're done.
Well, and you're building to square in the shop, right? And then you have, I guess, a little bit of wiggle room in the opening. So if you're going to the opening, a lot of times you end up not square because you've just followed the line, and that line may not be.
And a lot of like your reveals from like your jams to your casings might not be nice and even and straight.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely the way to go. The more you can like pre-assemble things on the ground, the better.
That's awesome. Well, it looks great. I'm enjoying watching that come together.
Me too.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad it's almost over. Like, before I got into this, I had always known that like a painted finish is the hardest finish you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And holy hell, that's accurate.
Yeah.
Because it's just like everything is just one thing after another. Everything's going to be perfect. You got to sand it like 1,000 times, fill all these damn holes, then paint it again. Or it's like, if you did like stain grade. Is that you put some like putty in the hole and just move on with your life?
Yeah.
No. Hey, don't worry about like caulking it to each other. All the seams don't get caulked. Oh my God, so much.
It seems like there's a lot of pros and cons because there are things about the just the construction you can do. The fact that you can caulk fairly easily with painted stuff is a bit of an advantage.
Easily. Like caulking is an art in itself.
Huh.
Yeah. Easily. One that right. I don't have any skill with.
Yeah. It could be real
me
messy.
Me and a caulk gun are bad idea. Yeah.
But it also, you know, you've got that advantage, that fudge factor, if things aren't perfect. If it's stain grade, it definitely puts more pressure on making sure everything. Well, I guess with the pre-assemble, it's not as big of a deal. You've got all your joints closed. Everything is looking good at that point anyway.
No, but I still caulked all the seams.
Yeah.
Just so there was something there for the paint to kind of roll through.
Yeah.
With the baseboards, that's all like installed like a standard way. Because I know the amount of work that goes into fixing issues, I'm still cutting and fitting those as I would if they were stain grade.
Okay.
Because I'm like, I don't really want to be finessing all this crap with like filler and caulk and like blending stuff out. I'm like, no, I'm going to get my miter nice and tight and perfect. My copes are going to be nice and tight as well. So I don't have to worry about all that prep work. And I think what I've learned the most about working in that room is this idea that was kind of in the back of my head as Donovan and I were working on our like new stuff. And that's like, I feel like in most of like the common trade stuff, it's always like, let's pass the buck on to the next guy. The next guy will fix it. The next guy will fix it all the way down the line.
Yeah.
And when you're the guy that has to fix everything down the line, you're like, no, I'm going to do it right the first time, get set up well, so then down the line it just happens much more like naturally and evenly. That great room is a good example of the buck being passed so far down to the point where someone can't fix it anymore.
Oh, geez.
There are so many inaccuracies in the room itself, because that room is all about the lines, right? It's got the vaulted ceiling thing. It's all about the lines and the straightness and everything. The framing is not straight enough to allow the sheetrock to actually follow a straight line. So it's all doing all kinds of curvy stuff. So I'm doing what I can to kind of mask that. I'm painting the entire ceiling instead. They used to just have like, there's like a flat spot in the ceiling. And then it comes up to like the flat and then the slopes, whatever, and then the walls. It used to be a three-tone paint job in there. I'm doing a two-tone, so the ceiling and the angled things will become one paint, so you can't see these wavy lines where that flat area meets the angled
pieces. Just masks it visually.
Yeah, because that was a problem I had when looking in that room. Now I'm like, you look up the ceiling, you expect to see this nice straight line down the whole thing, and it's all over the place because they're following the actual seam with the paint. Like, you can't, that's, ugh.
Yeah.
And there's a few other places where like the framing wasn't set up correctly for the sheetrock to happen. So they have a valley that comes down into the corner of the wall. So that valley, the outside corner, does not meet the inside corner perfectly. It's like off by a half inch. So they could have fixed that by furring out one of the walls a half inch with like two sheets of sheetrock or something, but they didn't.
Yeah.
Because on the other end of the room, there's a fireplace. They're trying to keep that centered. But the biggest problem with the fireplace is that that goes up and is supposed to die into that flat area on the ceiling, like perfectly. It doesn't. On one side, it goes over a half inch into the seam or into the angled thing. And the other side, it's like 2.5 inches. So it's like off center up top. So someone, either they frame the chimney area out of plumb or the roof is a little bit off. And then nobody decided to fix it.
Jeez.
It's like all little details you see. It's like, I'm like, hey, I got to draw a line somewhere. I'm not going to fix those, but at least I can hide all this waviness and all of the sheetrock.
Sure. Well, and realistically, once you're done, if you do those things, most people aren't going to really see it. You guys might see it.
That's the problem too, is I freaking live there.
Yeah.
And I got to see it.
Yep. It's going
to
drive you
That's
nuts.
That's honestly one of the biggest problems I'm having with this is I'm like, the detail level I'm taking it to is like so above and beyond what most people would, because at the end of the day, they just like, they leave and they never see it again. But I have to see that every day.
Well, you're the next like, guy, right?
Now's the time.
Can't pass it on right. to the next guy. That's you.
It's a really good point, though, that I hadn't really thought about, the passing of the buck. My day job, that's kind of where we live. Like, we don't frame houses or anything like that. Like, what we do is aesthetics, you know, fine hardwood trims and doors and windows and like finishing steps. And there's always problems. And you just kind of wonder, like, why wasn't this fixed before? Yeah, because there's like 17 subs that have gotten to it beforehand. And you're right. Every single one of them is like, yeah, I'll fix it in post. Yep. never gets fixed. Yeah. Wow.
Frustrating.
That's frustrating.
Wow. All right.
And especially because you're the guy who has to live with it, right?
Yeah. Like, fix it and live with it afterwards.
I'm happy with the extent to where I'm going to take it. I think it'll be a little better looking.
I'm sure it will.
We'll see.
I'm sure it will. Well, hey, you guys know who else is remodeling and expanding?
I know who else is better looking.
Wow. Jeez.
Sorry, that one was better. I had to take it.
That hurts. That's below the belt. Yikes. Well, our friends at Rockler have been expanding and remodeling many of their stores throughout the country. If you haven't been to a Rockler store lately, you may be missing out. The latest store opening in August includes a new location. I don't know this place. Novi, Michigan? Novi? Novi? N-O-V-I. You guys ever hear of that place?
Nope. Just now.
News to me. Okay. Novi, Michigan.
I hear they have a Rockler store.
Mm-hmm. They also have the store openings planned for Greenville, South Carolina in late August, and Cary, North Carolina, and Brentwood, Tennessee later this year.
Wow.
That's a lot of stores. You'll find top power tools and accessories, an extensive lumber selection, dust collection, router tables, T-Track, hardware, and more. Their stores also host a variety of classes for woodworkers of all skill levels. Visit Rockler.com to find a store near you. No matter which store you visit, you can count on Rockler for innovative products, expert advice, and great service. So go check them out. And if you're in any of those cities or states, you got to go check out the grand openings. I mean, usually there's like some big thing they do for grand openings, so keep your eye out for that. But store openings, good thing. So thank you, Rockler, for sponsoring the show.
They usually fly Matt in to cut ribbons and
most of the time
kiss
do
babies
they?
And
Is that
things.
Something they do
with the giant scissors,
right?
I mean, actually, normal size scissors.
You get your big circular saw to cut it like that. Okay,
I'm guessing Rockler sells a lot of T-Track because they always highlight T-Track in all their ads.
T-Track is a popular thing. I mean, people put them in everything and then never use them. So, you know.
That's kind of where I was going with that. It's like, I remember you putting T-Track in something like 20 years ago and never using it.
Yep, so. That's what happens. You put them there because like you're supposed to. It makes a great thumbnail for YouTube. And then you go, oh, what am I going to do with these? It's just places for dust. What am I doing? All right. Well, enough of my opinions. Let's go to questions. So I got one here.
Here's another opinion.
Here's another opinion for you that you didn't want. Joshua wrote in. He says, I'm building a conference style table. The legs are a slab style, approximately 2 inches thick, 30 inches wide, 27 and a half inches tall. The grain direction is vertical. I want to thin the slab so that when you look at the edge of the leg, the top of the slab is 2 inches wide and the bottom of the slab is 1.5 inches thick. However, I want to start the taper approximately 12 inches from the bottom of the slab. This would mean that I need to take about 1/4 inch off of each side of the slab at the very bottom and taper it to nothing at about 12 inches up from the bottom of the slab. I can't figure out how to go about doing this. Hand plane perpendicular to the grain, belt sander. I have a 20 inch bandsaw, but that won't cut a 30 inch wide slab. How would you accomplish this task? All right, so the things I normally do for this, I went through my mind all the different ways. Okay, bandsaw is out. Planer sled, if it was smaller and you had a big enough planer or a wide belt sander, you might be able to prop it up and get that taper on both sides. But again, size. This thing is just too big. I'm sure he doesn't have anything that can accommodate that. This is one of those things where over the years, I've tried all kinds of things for stuff like this. Now, my version of this is usually the underside of a table, and I'm putting one of those like long, shallow tapers like on the end or a bevel, I guess it would be.
An underbevel of sorts.
Underbevels, yes. And I would spend a lot of time with like rough sanding tools. I would use some power carving tools to do it. That could leave a very irregular surface, and it's a little bit, it just takes a long time. And you're getting it nice and flat, you're always going to want to hit it with like a hand plane when it's all said and done. Or, you know, you could do a belt sander too, because that's usually got the platen on the bottom that's nice and flat. But I think the best tool for this that I've found with these things is a handheld planer. Like the kind that you normally do not use in a fine woodworking shop. This is one of those cases where it is brilliant for this kind of work. It's aggressive. You do have to be careful. Take a light cut, but you can go cross grain with it. Just avoid the very end of the board so you don't blow out. On something as big as this, you can even go with the grain and you will plow that stuff away in a fairly flat fashion, right? Because it is a planer. So it is, you don't want to gouge, but you can definitely zip a little bit off at a time and have it pretty flat so that when it's all said and done, you just go back with your sander or some sanding blocks. You could use a hand plane to do some final smoothing. But I find that that tool is particularly good if what you're trying to do is effectively a straight flat line that you just want to remove a whole bunch of material. I mean, you can get those at a pretty reasonable price, but for stuff like this, it's the fastest way to do it that I know of. Can you guys think of any other way outside of like hand tools?
I'll just leave.
A hand plane?
Shannon, you can leave now and let Matt answer this question. We know the hand tools. We're talking like, is there a power tool method?
Let me add that I just saw Vic Tesselin on Instagram using one of those handheld electric planers. So apparently they do happen in fine.
They're in vogue. Yeah.
Well, you know, we just started something, so you're welcome.
The other thing you can do is you can get a sawmill and then you can prop it up in your sawmill and just slice it right off.
There we go.
Yeah, it's a good reason to buy one, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, why not? I mean, you got slabs, you might as well have a sawmill. I mean, don't they go hand in hand?
I think so. I think they do. Did you know that that wood comes from logs? I've heard
that. You learned that today. Yeah. Yes.
I've heard that.
It's pretty cool.
I think anything else, it has to be a tool to the wood type thing. Anything else is just going to be, you know, a bunch of jigs and probably dangerous, frankly. So, yeah, I think, I think that's the best solution.
Actually, you just touched on one, like the kind of stuff you would use for a slab flattening rig with a router.
You could do that.
I suppose you could do that, right? Prop it up as long as you get that angle right and you've got the rails and some way to. And that's something that might be useful on other things in the future, too, that wouldn't be bad to build, or they sell solutions for that now, too. So
I still think the planer is the best idea just because you're right. They're not expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Like every major brand makes them, from DeWalt to Makita, you know, and it's one of those things that, like, the router sled, if you're done to flatten a lot of slabs, sure, that's a thing. But this, planer thing, it fits in its little blow molded case, stick it on a shelf, it's out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
You probably could find, like, once you have one, you'll probably find a lot more uses for it.
Yeah. And like, you build some confidence. Driving
stuff to walls, like window jams.
Totally.
Yeah.
And I just had a door that was stuck in the office at the shop.
There you
go. One pass. I was like, we got to clean this up now because made a lot of dust, but it worked really well and fast. And it was something where I was kind of afraid of the tool until I kind of brought the blade in a little bit and realized you can take very small passes and you do have a pretty good degree of control with that thing. And with a little bit of experience, you build confidence, you're going to start thinking of reasons to use it. So I think I kind of have to take back my comments in the past about that not being the tool that most of us would need. There just are times where it's the best tool for the job. All right, Shannon, I think you've got one here.
James wrote in, he said, I bought an old transitional plane at a flea market, and this plane is from the Fulton Tool Company, and it is a monster 30 inches long. Plane needs some work with a cracked handle, it's got plenty of rust, but it's in good condition otherwise. I already have a good quality jointer and a smoothing plane, but I don't have a reliable jack or foreplane to hog off material to flatten large panels or add big bevels to the underside of a slab top. Having found almost no detailed information about 30-inch long planes, I wonder, were these planes originally intended for use as a foreplane or as a joiner? The iron on this plane, which may not be original, is not cambered. I'm happy to put a camber on it if you think it would make a good foreplane or a substitute as a jack plane. So I believe this is, well, this is a Fulton plane, but this everybody modeled after Stanley. I believe it's the Stanley 34 is a 30-inch long transitional plane. If you don't know, a transitional plane has a wooden sole, and like the mechanism that moves the blade forward and back and the frog and everything is a metal part that's essentially bolted onto a wooden sole. So it was a transition from fully wooden planes to fully metal planes. That was the idea behind them. I think this is a very bad idea to use this as a foreplane or a jack plane. It's just too long. The idea of the longer the sole, ideally the flatter the board you will create. And the foreplane and the jack plane are really meant to sit in that sweet spot in between the short smoothing plane and the long joiner plane. If you're going to put a cambered blade and take a heavier cut out of it with it, you're just asking for more work to push this heavy plane around, but it's also going to span across more hills and valleys. So in order to hog out material, you're probably going to have to advance the blade a little bit in order for, because it's going to span, sorry, I'm using hands here. So watch the YouTube video. If you haven't seen it yet, go to YouTube and watch Wood Talk, but you'll span from hilltop to hilltop much easier with that longer sole, but you're going to miss like all the wood in between unless you take a really heavy cut and you advance the cut in order for the blade to kind of cut down in those valleys. The problem is the minute it hits one of those hills, it's going to take a massively deep cut and it's probably going to tear it all to hell. The beauty of a shorter foreplane or jack plane with a cambered iron is that it's not going to skim over those valleys. It's going to navigate the hill, the topography a little bit easier, and you're not going to have to take such a heavy cut. Plus, with a heavier cut requires more force to push it, and with a heavier plane requires more force to push it. So now you're taking a heavier cut with a heavier plane. That's just a nightmare. So if you absolutely want to use this plane, I recommend committing something that will probably get you thrown out of any hand tool forum, and that would be cut the sole down shorter. lop like 4 inches off either end of it, and there you go. Now, but even then, you're still at a 22-inch long plane, which is just
super long still.
It's just not what the plane was intended to do. You're going to find out working so much harder to do what you want to do. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's pretty, maybe. And again, now I'm going to get thrown out of hand tool forums. This might be one of those instances where you hang it on the wall because it looks pretty.
There's nothing wrong with that. I got a couple of those, and gives me that like TGI Fridays vibe in the shop. I love it.
Yeah, it's important.
I got like some old license plates.
Everybody needs more Cracker Barrel in their shop.
There you go.
Yeah, it's shop flair is the way I look at it.
Shop flair. Yeah. Do you have at least six pieces?
Yeah.
You want some flair? I can get you some flair. You good?
Yep, I think we're good.
I'm good.
You good with that nice awkward pause you just gave us?
Yes.
Those are the best.
No.
That's why you're here, Matt.
You can just not feed into my stupidity sometimes. That would be kind of helpful, too. All right. Try this one is from Simon. I know. Thank you. All right. it's been a long day already. It's only
miss you, Matt. We missed you. Glad you're back.
I didn't talk to you guys last month.
I know.
I was all alone in my own thoughts, in my own head.
I know. This is what happens.
It was very scary.
Bad for you.
All right. Simon asks, I was wondering what happens to all the beautiful wood slabs Matt saws up. Is it possible to see some end products where his wood is used? Does he sell product to Rocklear and those other woodworking stores, those other Rocklears?
This is a sign that most of Matt's YouTube content lately has been sawing up logs. People are like, does he actually build anything with
what
it?
Do you do with
scroll
those?
Up. Yeah. Scroll up, people.
That's awesome.
That's actually why I took this question, because I've been getting this question a lot lately. And I mean, the vibe, this is a little bit of a nicer vibe. Thank you, Simon. But the vibe from some of the other commenters are like, Matt never shows anything he's ever made with any of these slabs. And I get to this kind of dark place in my mind where I'm like, you know, I've made a lot of videos that take a lot longer to produce than these Sama videos where I show you exactly what happens to these slabs. It's literally every project video that I've ever made goes through the whole background, the whole backstory of sourcing this log, bringing it home, putting it on the saw, cutting it up, stacking it, drying it. Then boom, years later, here's some wood in the shop. Let's start like a normal video. So it's kind of upsetting a little bit to me, like in my heart of hearts, that... The people that are like leaving these comments have never gone back and watched any of my project videos, but I should know that because the viewership on the project videos are so far below the Sama videos anyway that I kind of should expect it, but I still feel a little, this is a very emotional job. You know, it's like,
do you even woodwork, bruh?
I don't even know anything about
hashtag.
Wood.
I mean, you got the creds, you know, you've done the work. It's there. But that's the way things work now, right? Very few dig back deeper, you know, just the way the platform is designed.
Deep, right? I think most people aren't really that interested in seeing me make anything out of the stuff. They just want to see, like, here's a finished picture of something, which I have too, but nobody follows me on social media either that watch these Sama videos, so they never see my finished products either, so... I don't know.
Well, the good news is you can just do a little bit of editing tweak and re-upload the same stuff, and...
Funny you
obviously,
should mention
no
that.
One's
exactly
going to pay attention.
Doing.
There you go. See?
It's going to be 100% ASMR, no talking, nothing. Just here's a whole bunch of content of me going from a tree to a finished piece of furniture. Have a nice day. Oh, yeah. By the way, buy my guild project.
Are people going to get mad that like there's not enough log stuff and slab work going on if you do a project like that? Have you trained your audience to not want that anymore?
They have no idea what they want.
They don't know what they want. That's the problem. I think this is also this thing that happens.
It's all over the place. Like, not to devolve us back into like inside baseball stuff, but like the viewership and the algorithm and like how people use YouTube has changed so much over the years.
Yeah.
So like I can see it. Like if one video 1 week does really well, the next video the next week is going to do pretty well too, because the people who watched my video last week are getting suggested to watch my new video.
Right.
Yeah.
But if I have a video that comes out that doesn't do as well, it takes a while for like the viewership to come back again.
Yeah.
Because no one's being suggested my videos again. And then I get the comments from people like, oh, Matt, good to see you back making videos again. I'm like, I make every single week there's a video, but you're not seeing them.
They're not getting the notification.
Right. So
yeah,
it's,
but you know what?
It's fun.
Look, I'm a 46-year-old man. You know what I watch on YouTube? I watch video game highlights and tutorials. Lately, I've been doing, thanks to Shannon, researching cycling stuff, watching all that stuff, right? That's most of what I watch. And you know what I still get on my homepage? The latest Mr. Beast video. right? Like, yep. So I have my doubts about this whole, like, YouTube treats the algorithm as if it's this animal that they have no control over. You know what I mean?
Oh, and it's like, know what's going on.
You guys know exactly what you're doing, whether you play the game or not. Like, I don't know. It can be frustrating to me that it's a very self-fulfilling prophecy in the way that these videos are served to people. It's like, well, if you did this, it would have done better. I'm like, or you could have made it have done better. Is that good English?
You could have showed it to more people.
You could have shown it to more people, and then there would have been more views, but no, it's all good. Enough complaining about that stuff. Is that my... Oh, jeez. I'm looking at you guys going, my ringer is off, too.
I'll finish answering the question while you're doing that.
Go ahead.
So what happens most of it, whatever I don't use, which is a lot of it, ends up being sold. I don't sell through any distributors or retailers or anything. It's all direct to customer, and most of my stuff goes to hobbyists. I don't have a whole lot of people that are buying stuff for commission pieces. I mean, here and there, but most of it is hobbyists that are like, I saw you cut this piece of wood up. I fell in love with it. I have to have it.
I still want to get up there to pick up some slabs for my place as well.
You know, I haven't seen you in like 4 years.
It's been a long time. I know.
I was thinking about that the other day.
I think I've seen Mark more recently than you.
Right. Exactly. I need a slab acquisition trip. I've actually had people ask me, like, when are you going to start selling Matt stuff here? Like, well, when I get up there with my trailer, we'll start selling some stuff. But yeah, I think that'd be great. All right, that's it. You good with that?
I think so. I don't know. Come buy some slabs sometime. Anybody that wants them.
Yeah, you want to know what happens? Buy one and make something happen, baby.
Yeah, and then I can share your picture of whatever you made. Or a whole video. Make a whole video about it. Learn what it's like to make a whole video about making a project, and I will share it for you.
That sounds good. All right. I think that's going to do
it for us.
Matt's
a little salty today.
I'm very salty today. I've been caulking all morning.
I hope
not
it gets
kind of caulking either.
I hope it gets worse or better, depending on your perspective. All right. Well, family owned since 1954, Rockler is your go-to source for high quality and innovative woodworking tools, finishing supplies, hardware, lumber, and expert advice. Whether you're building a simple bookshelf, a custom desk, or new kitchen cabinets, Rockler has everything you need to make your next project a success. Visit rockler.com and use the code WOODTALK, that's all one word, to receive free shipping on most orders over $49. And remember to head to rockler.com/woodtalk to enter for your chance to win a $250 gift card.
Right on. Well, folks, now is when you can send in your questions. So you could do it anytime, honestly. But I think ultimately you should be sending in questions about what kinds of projects you wish that Matt would make. If only Matt had made some projects. If only he made projects.
Any project,
he doesn't anymore.
Honestly.
Yeah, seriously.
Something.
Like all that grade wood, bruh. Can you make something from it? So, you know, send in your suggestions for what he should make it.
Paint the trim.
Out of the slabs.
All the wood he has, and he buys poplar for the trim.
Yeah. I forgot about that. That's awesome. That's right. Right. It's good stuff. So send in the questions, folks. Go to woodtalkshow.com. There's a contact form there, or just send us an email at woodtalkshow@gmail.com. And you know, if you've built a project and you want to show it off, you can show it off on your own Instagram, or you can show it off on the Wood Talk Show Instagram, because Margaret's always posting stuff on there about, you know, projects of the week and here's what you built this week. So definitely get your stuff highlighted there. Matt, that could be a good solution for you.
Oh, my God.
Maybe post some of your old projects on the Wood Talk Show Instagram.
Who's Matt?
Right.
Who's Matt? Who's Matt?
That could be a whole new feature.
Yeah.
That'll be Tuesday's feature on the Wood Talk Show Instagram.
Remember when Matt used to build things will be the theme.
Yeah.
Here we go.
No, I really think we should lean into the do you even woodwork, bro. That'd be a good hashtag.
That's good. Good stuff. All right. Well, thank you for listening, everybody. We're glad you're back. We're glad we're back, and we will see you again in a couple of weeks.
Or will we?
Or yeah, we might not. You never know.
Wow.
Bye.
Bye. Goodbye.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.